Yo, 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 Thought Warriors. What is up? Harlan Learning is on. It is I, Van Lathan Jr.
And it's me, Rachel Lynn Lindsay.
Rachel, what'd you do this weekend?
Wait, we have to acknowledge some things. We have to do like what? Some house.
House.
What is, okay, I'm not okay. What do you call it? Housekeeping. Housekeeping issues.
Okay.
One, people were upset that we have a new theme song and we didn't address it.
Okay.
Okay, that's not our fault, guys. Copyright issues, whatever. I don't know how we got away with it for 4 years.
No, it, look, I'll tell you how it happens. It's like people talk to us and they say, hey, the old theme song that we have, we can't do it anymore. We can't use it anymore. We have to get a new theme song. And then what you want me to say? Like, want me to fight for the old theme song?
No,
theme song?
But I think we didn't say, can you imagine you've been listening to the podcast for 4 years and then bam, you like you look up or you're listening, you're like, am I on the right thing? What happened here? Why are things changing? We didn't address it. To be honest, I didn't realize it was happening last episode. So
hold on for a second. I actually fundamentally disagree with this.
Okay.
Because I do disagree with this because I think this is part of the entitlement that I'm talking about. So I'm being for real. So I've watched shows and stuff forever, and sometimes they change the theme song. They change it. Now, they'll change something, and sometimes people don't like it.
Like Power. Remember
yes.
that?
Okay. They changed it, and people didn't like it. It was a huge deal. They went back to the old one.
Okay.
Okay? But, like, when they change it, there's not a press release that is given, or it's not like they come on before it and go, hey, just let everybody know there's going to be a new theme song.
Okay.
A television show changes the theme song. They don't come out and say, hey, we've got a new theme song now. It's a new theme song. You're free to tell us whether or not you like the theme song or you don't like the theme song after. But just us, hey, you guys might have heard a new theme song. It's much ado about nothing. It's
fair. But I just like, okay, after the fact, honestly, we didn't know that the theme song was changing that episode, to be fair. And I probably would have said something, but people were talking about it. So here I am dressing it out. Second thing is we were in a different room. We're also in a different room now. That's just going to happen. That's all I have to say about that. We're not always going to be in the same room. Last time we were in a different studio.
Oh, yeah.
People were like, what's up with that dark room? This time we're here. This is actually our old podcasting room.
Old podcast room.
It's just going to happen.
We do the podcast where we do it, and then sometimes, like today, I'll talk about it. We change the time. We decide we want to be in person anyway, and so we're in a different room. Here's the thing about that. Anytime you see us in person, it's because we've decided that the podcast is better for the visual experience if we can be in person and not be on Zoom.
Which we're trying to do more.
We've done every time if we want, which means we take it as we can get it, take it as we go, whatever. A lot of stuff's happening with video over here. It's a thing. I want to say something real quick.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
First of all, before we get into the weekend, which will have a lot to do with parties and whatnot, I want to apologize to a group of people. I want to apologize to the people at the Minneapolis Film Festival. I was supposed to be there this week. I was supposed to be there to present the movie once again for the very first time and to do a very special talk. I'd like to tell everyone that the film festival and the organizers of the film festival couldn't have been nicer and sweeter. It is a very important film festival. I would suggest that everybody pay attention to the movies that are being premiered there, and to the festival itself, and I'll be an advocate for it in any way that I could. I literally was too tired and girded up with other things to get on the plane. I've never, ever, ever not gone through with something I had planned to do at that late of, I literally made the decision last night, last evening, that I just couldn't do it.
You couldn't physically do it.
Yeah. And that decision impacts people that had planned on having me out there. I apologize to those people very deeply, very deeply. But I just had to, I still got to move around a little bit. But I just had to stay home this week for a bunch of different reasons. So I did that.
I think people who listen to the last podcast mm-hmm. are probably glad that you did that. Mm-hmm. You know, without knowing any of the details of what's going on, you just seem like you needed to take a beat.
Yeah.
So when I saw that you weren't going or you text, I was like, good for him. Good. Did my mom talk to you about that this weekend? Because my mom was very concerned about you.
No, well, I met Pretty Hair for the first time.
No, it's not the first time. She came in this podcast studio.
That wasn't the first time I met Pretty Hair.
No, remember she came in this studio, matter of fact, and she listened to a whole thing. We surprised you with her being here. You are tired.
Yeah, I think I am. but I was so energized when I saw her. What a light for the world. And your sister as well.
That was your first time. No, wrong. You've met Heather before.
And your sister as well. And then other people. Let me tell you something, man. Age is coming. And I'll tell you guys how. There are people who I've met, and I know that I know them, and I have no clue who they are.
Happens to me all the time.
People, I'm walking down the street. Bro, how you been? I'm like, what's up? They're like, dog, man, it's good to see you. Remember when I'm like, shit, yeah, that shit was crazy. How you doing? How your family? Oh, man, shit, everything. You remember my brother? Yeah, I remember him. Yeah, bro, that dude, man, it really, you could probably call him and talk to him, man. He might need to hear from you right now. Nah, not like that. Not our boy. I'm searching. And I'll try to drop clues in to...
You might.
Like, drop clues in to try to figure out so they'll tell me where I know them from.
Yeah.
And because I just don't have... Now, I've decided that everything changes. I am finally to the place where I'm going to stop putting in energy trying to be palatable. I'm just going to go, hey, brother, my man, where do we know each other from again? Just brutal.
People will understand that.
Okay. Well, let's see.
Yeah, try it out. People should. You meet a lot of people. You have a lot of different conversations. Because what happens to me is I can't remember who I was having a conversation with about. Like, or whatever we were talking, I'm like, who was I talking to about that again? That's what happens to me. So then I repeat conversations, and they're like, you told me that. And I'm like, oh, that was you I was having that conversation with. I'm sure that happens to you a lot, too, because you have way too many open tabs. Let's talk about this weekend. Because I want everybody to know something that I realized into the wee hours of my birthday, right? Beginning hours, middle of the night. Because that's what time the party ended on my birthday. The playbook is a myth.
Interesting.
I'm here to tell all you guys. I know how excited you are about it. I know Van loves posting things about me being scared of black dick, which is not true.
That's what you said.
I didn't mean it like that. I had people at the party questioning me about this. I'm not. I'm just saying, like, you know. Anyways,
yeah. You don't
it's
want to
not
go
a
back.
Fear.
You don't want
it's
to go
not
back.
A fear. It's a good thing.
Okay, well, I'm just saying.
It's a good
like,
thing.
Well, maybe if we get rid of the shame surrounding sexual congress that
it just scratches an itch.
It scratches an itch.
Okay, because a lot of people are like, oh, she never been with one before. I'm like, yes.
You have. That's what I was trying to articulate to people, and I didn't. Obviously, And I know Ashley was working with you because I kept asking Ashley to cut that clip and that clip never came out.
No, she did not. Ashley did not tell me a thing. I just saw it on social media.
Yeah, I just put it up there. Shocked the people with it. It's a hilarious clip. And I think everyone has their own thing. We can't fight people's things. There are certain things that people are going to want to believe about you. Certain people things are going to be, we can't fight people's things. I put it up there. The clip spoke for itself. Everything that people were saying in the comments was like refuted by what was actually on the screen.
Yeah.
You say you had never been with black men before.
That's what people want to believe.
Every single thing I asked you, was it size? No. Was it that? You said no. Addictive personality. It's all in the clip if you watch the clip. The caption was some of my best work.
The caption was great. Yeah. I'm never going to take it away from you. I'm going to acknowledge greatness. Mm-hmm. When something's funny, it was good. But the playbook is a myth, okay? So this weekend, Kalika and I had a birthday party, but it also turned into Van's birthday party.
Very sweet.
His friends came from Louisiana.
They surprised me with the
player proof. Surprised them.
I didn't even know they were coming.
He didn't know.
It was one of the greatest moments ever.
So all this time where he's, and got the pictures we're going to put up of the moment where you saw them for the first time. All this time where Van's on the podcast, like, how's your birthday? Oh, my birthday was terrible. I thought, my God, he does not even know that his friends are about to surprise him this weekend. So it was really sweet to see. And Kalika was like crying. And I was like, your makeup, girl, your makeup.
Yes.
This is your birthday. Right. But it was a beautiful moment. But it was your birthday, too. Your name was on the screen. We're celebrating it. It really turned into Van's birthday because he started inviting people. Like, I felt like the first hour of the party, I had to keep coming to you because there was a list and saying, who is this person? Who's this person? Oh, Van invited them. Oh, they're on this person's list. All right. So then I started thinking, wow, this could be a really great opportunity for the playbook to be in action.
Right.
Right? My birthday, along with Kalika's, I'm looking good, feeling good. This is an opportunity for me to meet some of these men.
Yeah.
And you failed me. Mm-hmm. I didn't meet anybody. Didn't walk away with a number. Wasn't introduced to anybody new. And I thought to myself, and I said this to you as we were walking out, the playbook is not real.
Yeah.
It is not real life. Hmm. Hate to disappoint anybody. This is probably our last playbook conversation.
It won't be. What this will actually be is a dissertation in how things become ahistorical. Okay, so let's go back and let's look at this party. And let's look at how this party was handled from the jump. And let's talk about how the playbook intersects with this party. Allow me a little latitude. This party was at a venue in Venice. Rachel and Kalika took the planning of this party on Venice very seriously. Very seriously. It's very serious planning the party, okay? And the whole time that the party is being planned is Rachel and Kalika making a guest list for the party, inviting people to the party, and I'm being told that there is a set number of people that can come to this party. Now, the people that I invited to this party, let me tell you why I invited the people that I invited to this party. I invited the people to the party that I invited for me so that I would have somebody to hang out with throughout the night. You have to remember, I did not know that my friends were coming.
That's true.
And by the way, it wasn't just friends from Baton Rouge that you guys surprised me with. My dear friends, Simon and Cleo.
Shout out to Nick, because
Nick fucking
helped,
made. Let me tell you something. I want to clear out real quick.
Nick. Nick helped with the list.
I want to clear out real quick, just real quick, about Nick May. You guys, I want you guys to go follow, support, and love on my brother, Nicholas May. Nick May is one of the most amazing, solid, dependable people that I know. Like, seriously, if I got $100 million right now, if someone just gave me $100 million, I would give Nick 15. Only 15. Like, I would give Nick 15.
It's okay.
Nick is just an overly qualified human being. He's just a great dude. Does he make you mad and frustrate you sometimes by saying stuff like Tracy McGrady is better than Kevin Durant? Yes. Does he get on your nerves? Does he like to argue? Yes. But if you have five people that you have to have in your foxhole that you really can rely on, depend on, and that you want to see do good, my brother Nick is one of those five.
Yeah, he's great.
He's a fantastic guy. Back to what I was saying. So I did not know that any of these people were coming. I didn't know that my dear friend Lawrence was going to be there, Simon, Cleo, any of the people that were coming. I didn't know they were going to be there. So when I'm actually inviting a handful of people to the party, a handful of people.
That's why we were so strict, by the way, about like, you can't invite this person. You can't, or I wasn't, Kalika was.
Yes, right. It's because I'm hearing, yo, for every person that comes to the party over like 150 people or whatever it was.
This is true.
It's going to cost this amount. So don't do this. Don't do that. Don't do this. Don't do that. And so I'm inviting people that I know from around here so we can hang out. Waz. Shout out Waz for coming by. Kerm, you fucked up. You didn't come by. Shout out to Waz. Shout out to the Midnight Boys. I'm inviting people that I can hang out with.
Yeah.
So how am I going to invite people in the playbook when I'm being told not to invite people over this amount of thing? It's being so strict. Nobody told me, hey, we're having a party. Invite whoever you want to invite. Boom, boom, boom. No one's doing that.
I actually said to you last week when you were telling me that Kalika was being strict with it, I said, just if you want to invite somebody, just let me know.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I said to you. I was like, if you just want to invite someone, let me know. But you could have said, Rachel, you know, I'd like to invite some people from the playbook.
What I'm talking about,
man. And I would have been like, please.
This is what I'm talking about.
Please. It's my birthday.
This is what I'm talking about. First of all, there were still some playbookers there. The pickings were thick. But look, you know what?
Slim.
You know, the pickings were it was slim. But you know what we should have? This is what we're going to do.
You're going to make it up to me.
We're making it up to you. We're going to start having in May playbook parties. People won't know that they're playbook parties. We won't call them playbook parties. Like, hey, it's a playbook party. But we'll know that they're playbook parties. But this one right here, I don't accept it because I was not... I didn't have the latitude to do it. Well, I will say this, though. If you were a single man, Saturday night was actually the place to be.
It really was.
Because
we have a lot of single girlfriends.
A lot of single
sadly,
women.
Beautiful, talented, fun, a lot of single girls.
If you were a single man, Saturday night was the place to be because, like, some of the homies were looking around like, God damn, how did this party turn into this? I'm like, these are all Rachel and Kalika's friends, man. Go out, be, you know, boom, boom, boom. Hang out, whatever.
Yeah,
amazing
there were a
party.
Lot, actually, a lot
amazing
of...
Amazing party. I want to also shout out Colin and Nessa for stopping by. Dear friends of mine came by and hung out. Everybody was there. It was the place to be Saturday night. If you weren't in Coachella, you should have been at Bigfoot West.
Bigfoot West. How about that place that we found it? It looked like a whole saloon already. We had no decoration. We brought the hay, though. That hay we brought
Y'all
in.
Brought that hay?
Yeah. Shout out to my assistant, Rachel, her name's Rachel as well, who's amazing.
Yeah.
She brought the hay in, had the signs up. We had the wanted posters. You had your own poster, too.
Yeah, it was great. I got
it was
fucked
great.
Over.
Thank you for everybody. Thank you to everybody who came.
I got fucked over by celebrate. One of your friends.
Who?
I'm not sure who this sister was.
She was black.
She was black. Me and my friends were outside. It's a good mix of people there, too. It wasn't as many Hawats.
We did that on purpose.
Yeah.
My faithful,
I saw Whitney, though.
Whitney was there. You know, my faithfuls were there.
Yeah. Shout out Nina Parker and Molly, too. I'm just going to go down the list of people that I love.
Wait,
that showed up at the party.
Who screwed you over? Who was the sister that screwed you over?
We were sitting down outside. It happened twice in a row. We were sitting outside. Me and my homies, and I was having a very deep emotional conversation with my friends about how important it was that they were there because how difficult the week was for me. And this lady comes out. I met her, and she goes, can y'all get up? Because they wanted to take a picture.
I wonder who it was.
And then, what's my homeboy that I know? I love this guy. He's a friend of yours from Texas.
Wayne?
Is it Wayne?
Alvin.
Love Alvin. Alvin got one of the best energies ever.
Yeah,
love
he does.
Alvin. Alvin, great. So they got up and they all taking the picture together. And then Alvin's like, we want Van to get into the picture. And she goes, no.
Oh, I already know who it was.
Just University of Texas people.
Oh, I know.
Could be in the picture. And I'm like, and at that point, I started to feel a little played. Because we looked around, because if a black woman asked us to get up, like, and so we were going, so we got up, and, you know, in the old days, either Ian or Ryan would have, I was like, let's just get up. And then so I didn't get up. And at my quote-unquote birthday party, I'm taking a picture, but not a problem. Then people ask me to get in the picture, and then she says, no, only University of Texas people. At that point, I almost started to put the drive on her. I did. I almost, at
I'm
that
glad
point,
you didn't.
At that point, I was very close to putting the drive on her at
I'm
that
glad
point.
You didn't.
But I was like, cool. And then they were like, hey, man, now could you get in the picture? I'm like, no. So I walked away.
I'm going to ask Calvin who it was.
Yeah.
But it was a great time. It was a great time. But
it's fun.
Also a missed opportunity.
Missed opportunity. There won't be any missed opportunities. You know what? This is what I'm saying to everybody who has problems with this.
Because now I'm ready for it.
I know
That's
you are.
That's the thing. I wasn't before. Now I'm in a place where I'm like, I'm ready.
By the way, people know that you're ready. I can't wait. We're going to have the most, it's still spring. We're going to have the most ignorant, on the scene summer. This is it. This is the last summer of being out there.
Is it?
Not for me. For me, yeah.
Okay.
For me, it's over.
Okay.
For me.
Okay.
It's time to start legacy building and getting serious and maximizing everything. But Rachel, your time is just
now?
Beginning.
Okay.
Can't wait.
It doesn't feel like now, but it's coming. It's coming. Yeah, it's coming. Feel like...
All right. That's enough pleasantries. Let's get into the show on the other side of this break. Rap beef. Let's do it.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
There are things happening in the world that are more important, and we understand that, but we're going to get into rap beef right now. Is Drake has dropped yet another record in his ongoing beef against Kendrick Lamar. Let me say something real quick. The record sucks. It's called Tailor Made Freestyle. I just want to say something real quick. Drake objectively does not suck. Drake is one of the most quotable, one of the most influential, important artists of his generation. And Drake is also a very nice guy. Okay, this record sucks. It's corny. It's cringy. It's whatever you want to call it. The record blows. It is Drake using AI versions of Snoop. It's Drake rapping, you can tell, but he used the AI filter to emulate Snoop and Pac, and I guess Jimmy Rabbit from 8 Mile, Kendrick, by saying things that he thinks Kendrick would say, but using Pac and Snoop to do it. It is cringe and weird.
So let me ask you this. Do you not like it because lyrically it's not good, or do you not like it? Oh, I have a few questions. You don't like it because it's lyrically not good, or you don't like it because he used AI, or do you not like it because another diss record came out and you think that one is better, or that's maybe how it should be done.
So at this point, where we're at is Kendrick Lamar has yet to drop another record in response to Push Ups, which was Drake's response to Kendrick dissing him mm-hmm. in a way on Like That. This mm-hmm. is my problem with all of this. And I think as an older millennial hip hop fan, I don't want to speak for everyone, but I think some of the sentiments are the same with people. I think my problem with all of this is that this beef, this round of it, is so lackluster. It's so uninspired. It seems choreographed
choreographed's a good word.
In a weird way, that the impotence of this beef really makes you, for the first time, question the health of hip hop as a whole. Because the guys that are involved in this are the cream of the crop in terms of hip hop artistry and popularity. You had Cole, Kendrick,
the big three,
and Drake, right? The big three. Whenever guys of that ilk have gone at it in a beef before, it's been culture changing and culture defining. If it's Pac and Big, culture changing, culture defining, right? If it's Hov and Nas, culture changing, culture defining. New terms come out. Like, it shifts the alliances and dynamics of hip hop. New alliances form. Some old alliances are gone. Like, people lose jobs, gain jobs. New rappers emerge. Other side beefs emerge. All of that happens. It's culture changing and culture defining when titans like that go at it. That's why, ultimately, even though there is a lot of static and foolishness that's involved, it's ultimately good for the game. Now, Big and Pac had some other stuff going on that didn't really have much to do with their beef. Like, Tupac was not killed over a beef with Notorious B.I.G. Mm-hmm. He wasn't. But there was some other stuff that was going on there that made that one a little bit more sinister. And the fact that those guys end up losing their lives, when you look back on it now, you wonder, was all the animus worth it? And obviously, you don't ever want anyone to be in that type of situation. But normally, out of this stuff, you see new eras of people's career embarked on. Well, say what you want about Ether. And I know there's been this revisionist history on Ether now and Takeover since Jay-Z has gone on to become who he became. But at the time that Ether dropped, I remember feeling like Nas giving a response to Jay that was in any way comparable to Takeover was impossible because of where Nas was at the time. But that beef, that response, really, honestly, spurned or it started a career resurgence and renaissance for Nas into some of the best rap that we've ever gotten and some of the best rap for Nas. Nas felt threatened. Nas hit the heavy bag. He doubled down on his talent. He doubled down on who he was. And now what we've seen from Nas since has been nothing short of glorious in terms of rap. All of this stuff is what's supposed to happen. With this, it's just not happening like that. It's not. It's not happening like that. These records are barely good. The music is not great that's coming from this. Cole bowed out, which from a hip-hop perspective was disappointing. But now from a life perspective, he's the only one that had any sense. I apologize deeply and sincerely to J. Cole for any opinions that I had, because J. Cole must have seen the fuckery written on the wall and just been like, why am I end up doing this for the next 2 months? I'm sorry, I was wrong.
He looks like the smartest person.
He looks like
in the
smartest one. And like, there's nothing coming out of this. No great records, no great lines, no great nothing. It everything that people say about hip hop, like the game is in a weird place, like the feeling is gone, all of that. If you were to base your opinion on the game off this beef, it's the same shit everything else is. A bunch of playing, a bunch of memes, and fake shit that we can't tell whether it's real or not.
Okay, when Kendrick first dropped his verse on Like That, that wasn't the take people had, right? Like, nobody was saying it was trash or corny or anything like that. It was like, oh, Kendrick did this or whatever, right? The bigger response came to how J. Cole responded to Kendrick.
Yeah.
I would think that what Drake has put out so far with push-ups and the TaylorMade freestyle, you're kind of giving him enough rope to hang himself in the sense that Kendrick's probably like, why would I respond to this? What's the point of this?
Kendrick has to respond.
Does he have to?
Yeah, he does. Because you have to respond.
Okay, let me ask you this about something that you said. Because you said that you're
I apologize
you're
for raising
concerned.
My voice. Everybody, when they raise, when yeah, I raised my voice,
right.
I wasn't screaming at Rachel.
No, that
I
time you screaming. Weren't. That time you weren't.
Yeah.
But that time. you talk about the health of hip-hop. Is it just the people? Like, is it just that we're with, is this a different generation, a different set of rapper? The way it used to be just doesn't exist anymore. And you could say that in the way that people rap, the songs that they put out, the albums they put out, the beef, since that's what we're talking about, it's just not the same anymore. So you're asking something of these people that they're just not capable of producing because they've never been those artists that you referred of. And this isn't a knock to their, I'm not a knock because I'm a fan of, you know, some of the rappers we're talking about.
Rappers.
Yeah, I'm not,
some of the greatest of
but
all time.
When it comes to what hip-hop was to what it is now, maybe you're asking something of them that they are just not.
Last thing I'll say about this, and I'm not saying that you're wrong. Look, everything changes, everything evolves,
yeah.
Everything becomes new, right?
Yes.
But when people are talking about the health of something, even when you talk about the health of America, what you're essentially talking about are the fundamentals of it.
Mm-hmm.
You're not talking about cosmetically how it sounds to you or whether or not there's an evolution involved that you can get behind. You're talking about the fundamentals of it. Are the fundamentals of whatever you're discussing, are they healthy? If you're talking about America, sure, there'll be different ways to make money. The financial system will change and evolve, right? The question is, the American worker, which is a fundamental building block of the American economy, how healthy is that person? And that question will never expire. There's no expiration date on that part of the fundamentals of what makes America a place where the economy works. Mm-hmm. If the American worker does not find success in America, then you're going to see an America that's not as healthy as it was before. Doesn't matter if he's working in retail, if he's working in industry, if he's working whatever, he or she got to work. The question now becomes, are the fundamentals of hip hop as we understood them in a healthy place? And how could it be when we don't even know who's rapping? Think about this. I'm not talking about we don't know who's rapping in terms of we don't know who wrote the raps.
Right, I get you.
We don't know who's rapping. We're not sure who's rapping. When I'm talking about the fundamentals of it, I'm not a hip-hop historian. I'm not Sway. I'm not Ninth. Sway, a gentleman and a scholar. Ninth Wonder, all of these guys. Charlemagne, all of these guys who know so much about this. I'm not those guys. I am a dedicated hip-hop fan since birth, though. Like, really born into it first grade when I heard I'm Bad, I'm listening to all these records, I'm doing all of this. Like, the fundamentals of it, how you talk your shit, hip-hop being competitive, rapping, writing your raps, reflecting not even your genuine life, but your genuine life observations. You know what I mean? Your genuine life observations. All of these things, the fundamentals of it, rhyming, beat making, all of this stuff. Like, I'm looking around and I'm like, yo, I don't know if these things are healthy, man. I can't. I'm listening to something. I'm like, yo, is this AI or is this real? I'm not sure if it's AI or if it's real. Then we don't know that. And then he uses AI on the song. He's rapping and then making his shit sound like. People have done this before. Hey, I'm going to act like I'm going to write this from Tupac's perspective and stuff like that. But like rapping the shit and then sounding like you, Pac. And then sounding like you, that's some white boy shit. I don't give a fuck what nobody talking about.
And thought that
would
be, like, that would be cool. Like, that would be well-received. That's almost the worst part. You put it out there and thought, like, this is going to hit.
And something, the last thing I'll say, I keep saying last thing I'll say, this is, there's something else about this, is that the also the audience has changed.
That's very true.
So being that the audience has changed, there's no real way to litigate this stuff anyway. It don't matter anyway. It's a dick sucking contest. It's a stand contest. Bro, Jay-Z was on top of the world. He was the number one rapper of ever, right? He was on top of the world, right? He drops Takeover. He solidifies his stranglehold on New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Solidifies the stranglehold on New York City. Solidifies it, right? Boom. Like, it was him saying, you know what? I've reached a point in the game that honestly, some of the other guys that I was even compared to, nobody really wanted to say it. Nobody wanted to say it. But around the time that the Blueprint is coming out, Blueprint era right after that, Jay had got to a point that honestly, Pac and Big never got to. Right? He had gotten to a point that they never got to. Big wasn't around long enough.
Sure.
I'm not talking about in talent or in impact. I'm just talking about in rap kinghood.
Sure.
He had kind of got to a point. It was a little different. And it still feels weird to say that now. And he was kind of realizing that and tiptoeing into it. He didn't want to just come out and say it, but if I ain't better than Big, I'm the closest one. He didn't want to come out and say it, but he was tiptoeing into saying it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the only guy really left, and there was more shit behind the scenes that was going on that anybody even thought that Jay had a competition in was Nas. So they're going back and forth. Nas had kind of got at Hove. Jay decided, okay, it's time to shoot at Nas. Takeover comes out. Jay-Z, now that's it. Nas can't come back from that. Like, he said a bunch of shit that people agree with. Stranglehold on Nas. Everybody's like, oh, Jay-Z. Jay couldn't have been more up. And to me, just from where I'm looking at it, and remember, I'm looking from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, that's the lowest point in Nas's career. I'm like, oh, that's the end for Nas. Nas drops Ether, right? They then go and do a poll on Hot 97. The people in the poll on Hot 97 vote for Nas over the hottest, biggest, at that point, most relevant, most up guy in New York or in rap, period. There was still enough objectivity in the game at that point from the fans for them to say, you know what? Even though this guy is the biggest fan, stan, whatever,
right?
Like, this record is a harder record perspective-wise, coming out of this whole thing and Takeover, who won this whole joint, put the records together. This record comes harder. There's a different feel to it. We can have a conversation about Ether and Takeover later. There's a different feel to it. That's impossible now.
Yeah.
It's impossible now. The people that want Drake eliminated are never going to admit that Drake beat Kendrick, even if Drake did drop a good record, which he hasn't yet. And the people that want, that are Drake fans, are literally never, ever, 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 ever going to admit that Drake took a loss. The dick throating is like at a level that makes it really, really frustrating. So this is the first time I'm like, we lost it. We've lost the plot. The recipes are being lost, and it's just not fun.
I hope nobody responds because I don't want to talk about it anymore.
No, you don't like it.
Did you like Chris Brown's diss to Quavo?
That was the hardest shit.
That's why I asked you that, because he really went at him. He didn't tiptoe right. He just went, every line was knocking Quavo.
That's the hardest shit. That was the hardest shit. Now, there was some shit in there, like any beef, right? Some shit in there that was probably, you know, you shouldn't say to somebody. You know what I'm saying? Like, I remember when I first heard Hit Him Up, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah,
we going this far? Like, and you know what I'm saying? Talking about different people's, like, their wives and their
like
their,
line one.
Their health. You know what I mean? All of that stuff. I'm like, but Chris Brown and Quavo is the purest beef that we have right now. And the only thing about that one is that's the only one that I think you have to watch, because it could turn actually violent. Because despite what some people might say, those crews have actually faced off in a violent way before.
They have faced off?
Yeah. Some years ago, we covered their teams. I can't remember when it was, but some years ago, those crews actually came out. They actually faced off in like a violent way. I don't think Chris and Quavo got into it one-on-one, but there was some crew stuff that was going on. And you know, you can't trust Chris Brown not to smack the shit out of somebody. The nigga is off. So he pops to it. He pops to it. Like you fuck with him, he pops to it. That's the way that it goes. But yeah, as far as the energy of a beef,
I felt it when I was listening to it. I was like, oh, that's why I ask you, that coming out the same time as Drake, did it make it seem even more watered down? Because
we also forget that Chris Brown be rapping a little
bit. I didn't say he doesn't.
Chris Brown could rap.
But the way he rapped about Quavo is what you would have expected if Drake's going to come at Kendrick or anybody else, because it seems like everybody versus Drake right now, that's what he would do, and he has.
Yeah. Kanye jumped into it.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like this is people's opportunity to take Drake out, which I don't know how I feel about that.
That feels
choreographed
too, but that's why I said that was a good word that you use. All of it just feels planned. All right, what's next?
Our brother Stephen A. Smith. Okay, so listen. Our brother Stephen A. Smith, and when I say our brother Stephen A. Smith, shout out Stephen A. Smith. I saw Stephen A. Smith. I don't know if I told you this. I saw him at King Charles in New York.
Oh.
Stephen A. looking healthy. You know, he lost weight. Stephen A. is doing his thing.
He is. Okay. Always has.
Always has. He went on Hannity's show, and he was talking about black voters and Trump, and the talking point that there are some black voters that are sympathetic to Trump because of Trump's legal trouble. Let's play the clip that a lot of people responded to, Ashley.
But I got to tell you something. As much as people may have been abhorred by Donald Trump's statement weeks ago, talking about how black folks, he's hearing that black folks find him relatable because what he's going through is similar to what black Americans have gone through. He wasn't lying. He was telling the truth. When you see the law enforcement, the court system and everything else being exercised against him, it is something that black folks throughout this nation can relate to with some of our historic, iconic figures. We've seen that happen throughout society. So no matter what race, what ethnicity you may emanate from, we relate to you when you're suffering like that because we know we have. And that's what he articulated.
That is the clip there. The reaction was swift. From everybody.
It was, from everybody, yes.
From people who are friends of Stephen A. Smith, like Roland Martin, from organizations like the NAACP.
Yeah.
Came out and responded to that.
Yeah.
And then Stephen A. Smith responded. Now, actually, do we have a little bit or any of Stephen A. Smith's response?
I don't even know if it was like a 20-minute response.
Yeah.
But there was no specifically addressing that comment. It was more of, how could you come at me as if I'm not pro-black or as if I'm pro-Trump when I've said this, 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 and this? And he goes on a 20-minute rant about it instead of acknowledging the statement that people had an issue with.
What he did say, though, is that his answer was in the context of black people who are voting for Trump.
He tweeted that, I think.
He tweeted that, and he also said it during the little rant.
Okay.
That his answer is in the context of black people who are voting for Trump. Black people he's asking to speak from the perspective of black people who are voting for Trump. And from their perspective, there probably is some sympathy that they feel for Donald Trump or some kinship that they feel for Donald Trump because of the way that Donald Trump has been the perception that Donald Trump is being treated unfairly by the legal system.
I did not gather that listening to the whole Hannity clip, I did not gather how that was the context he was speaking within.
Right. So, look, this is the thing. I'm not familiar with Stephen A. Smith's opinions on Donald Trump and who he's going to vote for. I got familiar during this. He said that he can't vote for Donald Trump. Donald Trump has done too much.
He believes there'll be a civil war.
He believes there'll be a civil war. Donald Trump is too dangerous. Doesn't want to vote for Donald Trump. I'll say this, though. The disappointing thing is not what he said, even. Because if we're being honest, what he said is something that's been said by people since these indictments against Donald Trump first started. Like, hey, the right has said this many times about different things. Hey, black men or black people like Donald Trump because Donald Trump is gangster. Black people like Donald Trump because Donald Trump puts sneakers out. Mm-hmm. Black people like Donald Trump because Donald Trump
is a businessman. Is a businessman.
He's got his money. He's got his money up. Yeah. It's like black people is like Donald Trump because Donald Trump is under a criminal indictment. Two things about that. Number one, when they talk about why black people like Donald Trump, it's either directly transactional with, you know, giving out stimulus checks, or it has to do with his cult of personality, right? Like who he is or who black people think that he is, which, fine.
Yeah.
Those things are more telling about what they think we respond to than anything else.
True.
Now, in terms of Stephen A. Smith, I do feel like how incredulous he was in the response to the criticism was a little bit annoying.
I agree.
Because if you go on Sean Hannity's show, and he talked about this, he says, I go on all kinds of shows. I've gone on,
MSNBC, Abby Phillips,
all that. And he asked, when I met him, he was on King Charles, right? Mm-hmm. If you go on Sean Hannity's show and you make the statements that you make about Donald Trump that seem to be echoing or in agreement with things that they've said, you have to know two things. Number one, Fox themselves will weaponize the clip. They, as part of what they do intellectually, they'll say, hey, here's Stephen A. Smith, a surrogate for American cultural blackness, saying this is why people like Donald Trump. That's number one. And number two, the fact that a lot of black people look at that as a cultural away game, they're not wrong. I don't think that black people are wrong for looking at an appearance on Fox News. Not saying that people shouldn't go on Fox News, mm-hmm. but I don't think black people are wrong for looking at an appearance on Fox News as a cultural away game. It feels like Fox News is continuously doubling and tripling down on some of the worst tropes, some of the most inaccurate, misinterpreted things about black Americans and putting them out there in front street. It feels like it's part of not just what happens on Fox, but a part of the apparatus there. It's a far right, not as far right as some of the other places, it's a far right cable television station, right?
Yeah.
And news apparatus, news organization, should I say. So going on there and saying that, which is something that they've been saying, obviously, there are people that are not going to want to hear that and are going to do their due diligence to disprove it. So it's like if you're going to go on there, drop your nuts, say what the hell you got to say, and then live with whatever the critique and the consequences are of that intellectually. But I don't understand why this is not just with Stephen A., with anyone anywhere. Where you would go to a place knowing the perception of how people look at it and then come back and chastise them when the place that you've gone and talked about these things and espoused these views and the views themselves are inaccurate. They don't represent what black people feel is true about themselves. They don't represent how black people want to be viewed in terms of we love everything criminal and we gravitate towards everything criminal and we have sympathy for every criminal that's ever been prosecuted. Like, we don't want that. So when people come back and they take you to task for it, or they speak across purposes to it, I don't understand the chastising that came from him on the other side of it.
Yeah. I think that it was more about being right than it was about, because he constantly says, I don't care. Right? That's the part that I find interesting. I don't care. I don't care about this. I don't give a damn what people have to say. But then you go on your podcast and you're constantly trying to prove how you aren't the things people are accusing you of without specifically addressing the statement that was at issue. It's not even just how he presented Black people to this Fox News audience, which, to your point, Sean Hannity wouldn't have him on. They talk about being friends. That's how he introduces him. Stephen A. Smith doesn't like to say he's my friend. And Stephen A. is like, well, I am your friend. I would imagine Sean Hannity knows how Stephen A. was going to answer that question before he even brought him on. Stephen A. Smith has to know that as well. Yet he still goes on, still tries to pretend like he's shocked or doesn't understand why people are coming after him when he knows the exact reason he's brought on to Sean Hannity and who he's speaking to. But I would say, too, it wasn't even just how he talked about presented Black people to this audience. It was also the watering down of Trump, which is why when he went on his podcast, he's like, no, I've said this, this, and this about Trump. Obviously, the comparing us Black people and our struggles to Trump and the way we've been discriminated against is wrong. But just the lack of knowledge of the fact of why Trump is being indicted, or not indicted, why he's on trial and what he's on trial for, and the sentiment that he was giving was as if this it shouldn't even be happening, right? We've talked about before about the timing of it. Yeah, sure, like that's politically influenced, but the fact that there is enough evidence to show that he is tied to this crime or committed this crime and he's rightfully being prosecuted for it. There's enough to show that, especially when you tie that with Michael Cohen and him already being convicted. I don't understand why Stephen A. Smith goes on these podcasts and isn't well-versed, it seems like, in everything that's going on and makes these generalizations when it comes to Trump and watering down what the real issues are with him, and then gives other people the permission or perpetuates these ideas to this audience of, oh, Stephen A. Smith says that, he represents the Black community, then that must be what all Black people think. Or Stephen A. Smith doesn't believe that Trump should be indicted, and it's just like a silly case that they're just doing because the Dems can't win in another way.
Right.
But isn't well-versed to talk on it.
So a couple of things. Number one, I think on some of these other places, that there are enough Black voices that the single voice of the Black person, like, isn't weaponized in a really specific way. So meaning, like, I go on CNN. I'll be on CNN this weekend, right? Mm-hmm. When I go on CNN, I give my opinion, but there are a lot of Black people on CNN.
But not Fox.
Not Fox. And so my point, there are Black people on Fox. I don't want to diminish the fact that they have Black people on Fox. They do have Black people on Fox. But what I would say is, like, in a lot of the spots that we see prominent Black people on CNN, you don't see them as much on Fox. So when you get somebody on Fox, a lot of times you're getting someone to speak directly to the Black audience.
Right.
And when they're speaking to the Black audience, it almost seems as if the people that are on Fox know what it is that they're going to say. Now, I will say this. The Riley Factor in the past was a show that was different about that. Like, you didn't see that as much. You saw he would have Mark Lamont Hill on there. He would have, like, whatever you think about Bill O'Reilly. And obviously, Bill O'Reilly is a sleazeball. But that was a show that was a little bit more open, and because it was a little feistier of a show. So when Stephen A. goes on there, or when other people go on there, you're going on there specifically to talk to the Black audience and to say certain things.
But he tries to act like he's not.
Right. He honestly might not be saying anything that he wouldn't say anywhere else. But you'd have to know that that's your function on Fox. Another thing is, I think a lot of what got Stephen A. Triggered or upset or made him respond was the idea that he is a sellout, or that he is in somehow a weak Black man, or a hidden right-wing conservative that doesn't have the best interests of Black people at heart. I don't know if that's fair. I actually know that that's not fair. I don't think that that's fair.
No, it's not.
And if I think that's the response to some of it that he was getting. To some of it.
But there's no acknowledgement about that key statement, right? If you even just look at what the NAACP tweeted at him, they're speaking to a specific thing about his comparison of how Black people have been can relate based on discrimination because Trump is being discriminated against. And he and Stephen A. Smith even said, when you look at historical figures, like he said these things.
It's true. And so what?
He should have just acknowledged.
There's going to be a part of the Black intelligentsia that is going to be like, yo, you're too prominent of a voice for that to come from you and for us not to say, nah, not true. Now, then there are going to be people that say, hey, what Stephen A. Smith just said is not true and is wrong. Roland Martin, NAACP, all of those people. Then there are going to be other people that go, Stephen A. Smith is a coon and a sellout. And at a certain point, it's probably going to all feel like the same thing from him, right? It's going to feel like all of this, it's just going to be like, oh my God, they're coming at me, they're coming at me, they're coming at me. I will say something else. I don't know that I agree with you that the timing of Trump's prosecutions are politically motivated. I don't know if I agree with that.
Oh, I'm almost positive you said that on this podcast.
Well, if I said that, I'm wrong. I think that
pushing it before the election, I do think is a little bit politically motivated.
What do you mean pushing it before the election?
Like, there's been this push to have these criminal trials prior to November. And I think the reason being that is because it will affect some of the outcome of the election. I think that's what the thought is. And I'm not saying that, you know, he's got all these felony charges against him, what, 34 in New York, what, 88, 90 or something like that total. I'm not saying that he shouldn't be prosecuted. I'm just saying I do think that there has been this push to get it done before the election.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I think that's an interesting, and we'll talk about that in a second. I think that's interesting. I think it's interesting as we segue to something about the election. I think that's interesting. I think, number one, I don't know if it's necessary, if it's necessarily politically motivated to want to have something adjudicated before someone runs for the highest office in the land. I don't think it's motivated by, I think you want to have the issue settled, particularly if it's an issue involving election interference or something like that. You would want to have the issue settled. I don't know if it's to the way I would look at it. I don't know if it's necessarily to wound him, because what I would say is if Trump beats the case up in New York, the Alvin Bragg case, the hush money case, if he beats that case, it'll be like steroids to his political campaign.
Sure. Well, for the people who are like diehard, the MAGAs, for sure.
No, for a lot of undecided voters too, I think.
You think they have the Stephen A. Smith sentiment they went after him for?
I think there are a lot of undecided voters, because when you look at swaths of people, they're still amongst likely voters. They're still voters, like 10% of voters that are undecided. There's still a large portion of voters in the Republican Party that say if Trump is convicted, in New York, that they don't feel comfortable voting for him. I think
they don't feel comfortable voting
for him. Right. I think that if he were to be acquitted on that case, then it would be a major shot in the arm. So it's, to me, it's risky either way,
mm-hmm.
especially once we realize that people didn't care about the indictment as much. It's risky either way. But I think
with that case, but even the Georgia case, they were trying to get done before. And I understand.
Well, you would want to get it done before.
I do. But I also think a little of that is, yes, I'm not disagreeing with the reason you're saying, but I also think some of it is, and I want people to be clear. I am not saying he should not be charged, because that's what Stephen A. Smith was saying, at least with the New York case. He was trying to say this wouldn't be an issue if he wasn't running for president. I don't agree with that. I think that he should be charged. I think that what they've shown is enough to indict, charge, whatever, go through with these cases or these trials. But I do think the push has to do with November and that it will, hopefully, some of it. I'm not saying the only reason. I'm just saying the timing.
No, I get what you're saying.
Not the reason he's being charged.
So I'll say something else. I'll say something else. There's a lot of stuff that's involved in some of these cases that have to do with political decorum as well.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Trump's ability to hold on to the documents that he had for as long as he had them in Florida, and the fact that they asked for the documents back and tried to get him to cooperate with turning the documents over was because he's an ex-president, and because it looks bad to raid the home of an ex-president. It looks bad to indict an ex-president. It looks like things that happen other places that don't really happen here. And they didn't want to do that. They didn't want to do that. And that was a latitude that they were giving him because he is an ex-president. In the case of the Alvin Bragg situation, like up in New York, the only reason why people are saying, hey, they wouldn't do this to him or they shouldn't do this is they're saying with who he is that this is something that people do and maybe you should let him off for it or give him latitude with it. It's because he's an ex-president. There's a certain amount of political, a certain amount of insulation that being an ex-president gets Donald Trump as well. I personally think, look, impropriety happens in 2020 and some of these things, sometimes later, right? You take time to build your case. When you've taken the time to build your case, you feel like you have a good enough case, bring your case. Bring your case. If it's before the election, fine. But bring your case. First of all, another thing, we talk about politics, is you won't be able to try him if he wins. Because he'll have immunity. So if you
not Georgia.
If you want to try him for some of this stuff, you're going to have to try him a lot of times before he gets into office because he'll be the president then.
But all this to say, this is what I don't why I don't understand the other part besides what he said about black people. I don't understand the point that Stephen A. Smith was trying to make when it comes to Donald Trump. There's enough information out here to show that a case should be happening in Georgia. A case should be happening in regards to the documents in Florida. A case can be made for what's happening in New York. I don't understand why you're just going to say, oh, they're just after him because. No. Serious accusations.
Mm. Okay. Real life update. We were literally getting ready to go. And we saw on Twitter that Stephen A. Smith had posted, I guess, a clarification, or some people are saying an apology for his statements on Sean Hannity. So Rachel's hearing this for the first time. I haven't listened to the whole thing. Yeah, we're both kind of hearing it for the first time. So Ashley, run a little bit of it.
I wanted to touch on something that I made news about just a few days ago. Let me say this, ladies and gentlemen. Accountability is where everything needs to begin in this world. It's something I say quite often. I certainly never hesitate to hold folks accountable when mistakes or mishaps occur, so I'm certainly not about to run from it myself. I'm fully aware that I've been in the news over the last few days, paraded all over social media as well, after comments I made during my appearance on Fox News' Hannity last week with the one and only Sean Hannity himself. And I'm fully aware of the outcry that has ensued because of it. A lot of folks in Black America seem pretty pissed at me right now, from friends and loved ones to colleagues, contemporaries, and dare I say, even the NAACP itself. Quite a few folks were put off, if not flat out offended, after my words were interpreted as associating support for Trump from the Black community with all the legal issues he's facing. For that, I sincerely apologize. To be clear, my words were misconstrued. I'm stating right here for the record that my words were taken out of context, misrepresenting and depicting me in a way I found every bit as insulting and disrespectful as folks in Black America evidently felt about what they thought I said. But I'll own it anyway. Because you know, please know that I know the buck stops with me. I'm in the communication business. I've been here for 30 years. So regardless of whatever interpretation that accompanies any words coming out of my mouth, the responsibility ultimately lies with me first and foremost before anybody else. I've always felt that way. I still do. I always will. Period. Blacks who refuse to support Trump are aware of his history of issues. And we'll never forget how Trump claimed Obama, the nation's first black president, wasn't even qualified to hold office because he was born in Kenya, although Trump recanted the statement during his 2016 campaign run for the presidency. Yet Trump's dissenters were not the topic of discussion when I was talking to Hannity. The support he appears to be receiving in the polls was what was being discussed. Five polls, count them, five. Emerson, NBC News, Daily Gos, New York Times, and Rasmussen, all big national polls had Trump leading over the last few weeks. Plus, according to 538, recent local polls also put Trump ahead in battleground states. He's up 6 points in Michigan, Arizona, and Georgia each. Insofar as Trump gaining support in the black community, well, how about various publications with these headlines? The Chicago Tribune. This time, Trump really does seem to be making black voter inroads. Why? The Washington Post. Voters of color are shifting right. Are Democrats doomed? How about the New York Times? As black voters drift to Trump, Biden's allies say they have work to do. Axios wrote, big Biden bummer. New York Times Siena poll shows gaps with key demographic groups. Wall Street Journal, Biden loses support among black men. The Hill, Biden losing support among black voters in swing states. Colon, survey. Al Jazeera, why are black voters backing Donald Trump in record numbers? And CBS News, black voter support for Trump up from 4% to 23%, poll finds. Why did I say all of that? Because I want to show you, I didn't just open my mouth. I read, I listened, and I've seen a momentum shift, as we all have. Anywhere I appear, no matter my subjectivity relating to what I feel, is still going to be based on facts being presented into the stratosphere. That is who I've always been. It is what I will always continue to be. But it's never exercised with malice in my heart and soul. Certainly never to insult or harm the black community, my community. My thoughts are put out there to present views I believe are pertinent, that alerts us to what's going on, what missteps may be taking place, and how, if at all, they could be corrected. I hope everyone can understand and appreciate my intent, if nothing else, as we march forward right here with the Stephen A. Smith Show. But just because my intent was harmless doesn't mean my words were harmless, and I know that. I can always do better, and I'll strive to do just that every single day that I'm alive.
Apology rating.
I haven't done one of these in a while, yeah. Right? First half, like the first minute,
uh-huh.
I mean, you got to give it a solid 6-7.
Okay.
He butts it and then tries to, you know, say, these were the factual things I was saying, but that wasn't, people didn't have an issue you saying Trump was ahead in the polls. You didn't even need to do all that. When we were talking about him earlier, for me, it was, I felt he was very defensive in his initial response and wasn't listening to what people were saying they were offended by. What he said was very problematic. He still didn't fully acknowledge it, but he did fall on the sword and say, it stops with me. I apologize. So for that, the recognition coming back, because he said he didn't care, came back. Obviously, somebody got to him. It's probably family. Because he does mention family this time. Mm-hmm. And he said, and he wanted to address it. So for that, I will give him a 6.
6? Okay, 6 pretty high. Interesting.
But he butted it.
I mean, look, once again, I don't think that, I think people are trying to get their own agendas off about what they think about Stephen A.
Yeah.
But I really do just believe that the trope that black people love Trump because he's in trouble with the police or he's in trouble with the law is deeply, deeply, deep. To me, it's deeply offensive.
Of course.
It's deeply offensive, deeply offensive. Okay. Let's take a break.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, Get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Okay, so let's stay on the election real quick. Let's talk about AOC. She was in a talk with Mehdi Hasan, who used to be over on MSNBC. Is not on.
He's not.
Yeah, Mehdi Hasan's been gone for a while. It's been gone. I mean, no, it's actually been that long.
Okay,
it's been that long. But Mehdi Hasan's show was not renewed by MSNBC, and now you know.
Oh, maybe I knew that.
He still has like a tremendous platform. She was in conversation with Mehdi Hasan, and she was asked giving her stance on what's going on in Palestine right now, how she thinks voters will respond to Joe Biden, who have huge problems with the way the war is being carried out over there. Check it out.
What do you say to a young progressive or an Arab American who says to you, I just can't vote for Biden again, mm-hmm. after what he's enabled in Gaza? What do you say to them?
I mean, I think everyone comes to this prospect and this conversation with a different history, different background, what they bring. You know, for an individual Palestinian American that has had their family killed, there is nothing. I mean, I am not here to lecture anyone. I also think that this election is more, in my personal view, I believe this election is about more than the president. And also, it's not just one election that's happening. We're having hundreds of elections.
Yes.
The balance of Congress, the balance of the House, the balance of the Senate, and the presidency. And I have a vested interest in protecting democracy, not just here domestically, but globally. And it isn't, I truly do not believe this as a lesser of two evils type of situation. I think about what conditions do I want to be organizing under in the next 4 years.
Yeah.
We can look at both of these individuals oppositionally as well, depending on what issue you have. But I would rather, even in places of stark disagreement, I would rather be organizing under the conditions of Biden as an opponent on an issue,
yeah.
than Trump, who is not... He seeks to dismantle American democracy. And I am taking that personally very seriously.
Yes.
Because we will not be able to organize for any movement towards anything if we are facing the jailing of dissidents. I mean, this is the kind of authoritarianism, yes. that he threatens.
Fascism.
And we have to take it seriously.
Where you at?
More people need to hear this, because I think people, she didn't say, hey, I'm voting for Biden, but she definitely is like, I don't want to do anything that's going to get Trump in office. And I think a lot of people are thinking AOC was going to vote third party. So to hear her speak in this way, and a lot of people, especially progressives, the younger generation, really liberals, look to AOC. And I think that what she's saying is exactly right. She hit it right on. It is so important to understand what it is to live under Trump the next 4 years. You have to understand exactly what it is he's saying he's going to do, which he's putting it all out there. He's not hiding it. And I just don't think, I think people are more, a lot of people get on to me because they're like, oh, she's so pro-Biden. She's so pro-Biden. She's trying to push us on Biden. I'm not. I more so take the stance that AOC is saying. I'm listening to what Donald Trump is going to say, and I'm not saying that Biden is the best option, but what else do we have? And I know that sounds so bad to say, well, I'm voting for this because I don't want this to happen, but those are the options that we have at the moment. And I do understand people wanting to use their right to vote and use their power to vote for someone that they're passionate about, and that might not be Biden or Trump. But if a vote for someone else is going to further the opportunity for Trump to become our next president, then I'm not down with that. And I think that what AOC is saying here is extremely important.
So there's been some polling coming out, some new polls. Biden is surging a little bit to the degree that he can surge. also, it has been unclear who the candidacy of Robert Kennedy Jr. Affects more, Biden or Trump. But there seems to be some polling, at least recently, that suggests that he's pulling from Trump's pool a little bit more.
What about Cornell? West, excuse me. Let me put some respect on this.
Cornell West. I'm hoping to have Cornell West and Melina Abdullah on the
On the podcast.
I don't think there's enough of a, I don't think it'll be statistically relevant, honestly, what they're able to do. I think their campaign, to me, is about more than winning the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they think they're going to win the presidency over there. Maybe they do. But
so maybe it's not even third party. It's just maybe speaking to the people who don't feel like they even want to vote.
Right. So I think the people that are going to stay home, look, it seems clear right now that RFK Jr. is going to have an effect on the election in some kind of way. I think this more has to do with people who may be reluctant to vote for Joe Biden in key states because of the war. I don't know how much influence AOC has with those people. She's been a couple of places recently in the last months where she's actually been protested and people have actually been calling on her to
be more progressive?
To be more anti-Israel. I think she's been to be the subject of some heckling. She's been the subject of some heckling. She's been the subject of some people taking her to task, which I don't know if that's entirely fair. I would always say that it's absolutely not fair. But I think the framework that she comes at this through is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because AOC, she said it in there. She's not talking about a list of wants and needs and an abstract. Yeah, Drake. She's not talking about an abstract who do I like more?
Right.
Or who am I mad at? What she said was very functional. She said is who, in the worst case scenario, is even the best opponent. Like, who can you organize under? What can you do based upon whose leadership and who affects the country the most?
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't talking about how she felt Joe Biden was doing as a president, how she felt Joe Biden was handling geopolitical turmoil that we have going on. She was talking about the opportunity for things to get better. And who provides you a better opportunity for things to get better?
Mm.
And for her, that is a very concrete structure. It's very functional. There's a lot of functionality to it because she actually has to work to get things done.
Mm-hmm.
She's an organizer. She is a lawmaker. So for her, it's who provides an easier path for me to do the things that I need to do to make the change that I think needs to be made. And she seems to think that that's clearly Joe Biden. The average American, I don't think, looks at politics that way.
No.
And I wonder if that's the way that we should look at politics a little bit more.
Well, at least in this election.
No, in any election. In any election, should you think, in my opinion, in any election, should it be, well, okay, I might like this guy, I might like this guy, I might like this lady, I might like this lady. Who is a bigger roadblock to me getting the America that I want? And when you think about Donald Trump, think about whether or not you're going to feel empowered in an America where your reproductive rights will be on the chopping block, probably the final death blow to those if he's willing to go through with the federal abortion ban, or if him and his party can continue the complete 180 that they've done in some places on this issue, people like Carrie Lake, if things will get worse with Donald Trump, if Netanyahu will have more of a shield around him or arm around him, if some of the things that the Republicans want to do in terms of voting rights, in terms of just all of this stuff, if it'll be easier to get those things done or easier to affect those things under one guy or the other guy, and not just at the federal level. Think about how it's for everybody to think about. Think about how Donald Trump and his influence on America emboldens and affects the surrogates that he has under him, not just the political surrogates, but the ideological surrogates and the cultural surrogates that then tighten their grip on what they feel like is their country.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but there's one group of people in America that believe with 55% of them believe, according to polling, that the Confederate flag isn't a symbol of hate. There's one group, one section of the country, that is white, non-college educated voters.
Hmm.
They believe that the Confederate flag is not a symbol of hate. That's also the same group that goes for Donald Trump the most. The overlap there, I heard that stat when I was looking up the research for another topic that we have coming up. But when you think about that, those are the people, I'm not making a specific observation about college or whatever. What I'm saying is, those are the people that have their guy, and they didn't get to make the country the way they see fit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a question that everyone has to ask if you're really ready to cede the country to those people. So I thought what she said was, it actually reorganized my feelings on things a little bit. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, because you've been anti-Biden.
That's not true. I haven't been anti-Biden. See, this is the games that people play. I'm going to go Stephen A. Smith on your ass one of these days, man.
Well, I like Stephen A. Smith.
Yeah, but like the way he be getting at people. I'm going to do that.
Charm.
I'm going to do that to you. okay, Tate Reeves proclaims Confederate Heritage Month in Mississippi, April 2024. Confederate Heritage Month, 31-year-old tradition that started in 1993.
In Mississippi, Lord, Mississippi. The governor has proclaimed April Confederate Heritage Month. And next Saturday, if you're not busy, April 27th, specifically was proclaimed Confederate Memorial Day. The proclamation was shared by the Facebook page of the state landmark, the Jefferson Davis Home and Presidential Library. Check out the caption here. They invite you to come celebrate with us. Celebrate with you.
Your thoughts on this, Rachel? What do you think?
I didn't even know this existed, did you?
I celebrate it every year.
Well, our states are two of the states that have celebrated it, even though post-2020 it seems like most states don't. But Mississippi is still going strong. Mm-hmm. Seems they do it every year. I did not know April was Confederate History Month.
Our birthday month.
And then I started looking at it, and I'm like, when did this start? You already said it, 1993, and I'm like, who was pushing this? Obviously, we know it was somebody white. I could have assumed it was a white male or a group of white males. And then I saw it was the Sons of Confederate Veterans. And then I started looking up.
Which I could be in, by the way.
Why don't you?
I was talking to somebody about it.
Did you look up membership?
Like, I was talking to somebody and we should go do it just to fuck their shit up.
Because you have to be a man.
You have to be a man, and you have to be the descendant of a Confederate officer.
Because there's a woman group. It's like United Daughters of
Confederates.
Yeah, something like that. And then I saw that the Southern Poverty Law Center said that, because the group is like trying to water down mm-hmm. what it all means, right? It's like, oh, it's not about slavery. It's about unity and, you know, whatever else it is that they say. But they said that a significant membership overlap with the SCV is with the League of the South. And that organization defends slavery. Mm-hmm. And claims that the federal I'm not even going to read all of that. But it defends slavery. It's a racist group, right? It's a racist group. So, which we could already probably assume, right? The people who are behind this obviously are trying to pretend that Heritage Month is really about honoring the South, preserving the South, honoring those who fought, you know, for this country, but they don't really want to talk about the reasons that they fought for this country. None of this is really shocking to me. I think it was shocking that there was a month, but when I saw that it's Mississippi that it's doing it, I'm like, such are things in Mississippi.
Yeah. Let's take a little dive into it. Just a little bit. I won't get too much of the stench on this. Let's dive into it a little bit. I'm going to read something real quick.
It excites you. You're trying to join the group.
Shut up. This is from Alexander H. Stevens. This is a cornerstone speech. It's March 21st, 1861 in Savannah, Georgia. I'm going to try to be quick in reading this speech, but I'm going to read the whole thing.
What year?
1861.
Okay.
It's the vice president of the Confederacy at this point. We are passing through one of the greatest revolutions in the annals of the world. Seven states have within the last 3 months thrown off an old government and formed a new. This revolution has been signally marked up to this time by the fact of its having been accomplished without the loss of a single drop of blood. I'm proud of that. This new constitution or form of government constitutes the subject to which your attention will be partly invited. In reference to it, I make this first general remark. This first general remark, cornerstone. It aptly secures our ancient rights, franchises, and liberties. All the great principles of Magna Carta are retained in it. No citizen is deprived of life, liberty, or property, but by the judgment of his peers under the laws of the land. The great principle of religious liberty, which was the honor and pride of the old Constitution, is still maintained and secured. All the essentials of the old Constitution, which have endeared it to the hearts of the American people, have been preserved and perpetuated. Some changes have been made. They form great improvements upon the old Constitution. The subject of internal improvements under the power of Congress to regulate commerce is to put at rest under our system. The power claimed by construction under the old Constitution was at least a doubtful one. It rested solely upon construction. The true principle is to subject the commerce of every locality to whatever burdens may be necessary to facilitate it. If Charleston Harbor needs improvement, let the commerce of Charleston bear the burden. If the mouth of the Savannah River has to be cleared out, let the sea-going navigation, which is benefited by it, bear the burden. Not that bad, right?
Sure.
It's okay. All right. The new Constitution has put at rest forever all the agitating questions relating to our particular institution. African slavery, as it exists among us, the proper status of the Negro in our form of civilization. This was the immediate cause of the late rupture and present revolution. Jefferson, in his forecast, had anticipated this as the rock upon which the old Union would split. He was right.
Okay.
What was conjecture with him is now realized fact. But whether he fully comprehended the great truth upon which that rock stood and stands may be doubted. The prevailing ideas entertained by him and most of the leading statesmen at the time of the formation of the old Constitution were that the enslavement of the African was in violation of the laws of nature, that it was wrong in principle, socially, morally, and politically. It was an evil they knew not well how to deal with, but the general opinion of men of that day was that somehow or other, in the order of providence, the institution would be evanescent, and pass away. This idea, although not incorporated into the Constitution, was the prevailing idea at that time. The Constitution, it is true, secured every essential guarantee to the institution while it should last, and hence no argument can be justly urged against the constitutional guarantees thus secured because of the common sentiment of the day. Those ideas, however, were fundamentally wrong. They rested upon the assumption of the equality of races. This was an error. It was a sandy foundation, and the government built upon it fell when the storm came and the wind blew. Our new government is founded upon the exact opposite idea, or should I say exactly the opposite idea? I'll say that again. Our new government is founded upon exactly the opposite idea. Its foundations are laid. Its cornerstone rests upon the great truth that the Negro is not equal to the white man, that slavery, subordination to the superior race, is his natural and normal condition. This, our new government, is the first in the history of the world to be based upon this great physical, philosophical, and moral truth. Now, I read that entire thing for two reasons. The first reason was so that you could see the way the setup to that, the cornerstone speech, as it's historically known, was to affirm Stephen's idea of freedom, what he thinks freedom to be. And he qualifies that he thinks freedom is the freedom that's outlined for free people in the Constitution, and that they are maintaining that constitutional freedom.
Mm-hmm.
That they are saying, hey, we don't have any differences in what we think freedom is. Freedom was set aside in the Constitution, hey, Magna Carta, hey, whatever, series of laws, whatever, it's the same. Where we differ is that, in his opinion, the slavers that framed the country were begrudging slavers, that they in some way were hypocrites because they believed that slavery was morally reprehensible. Jefferson was a student of the Enlightenment. So the formation of his intellectual philosophy, his societal philosophy, was based in abolition, because that's what the Enlightenment really talked about. Not specifically, but that was part of Enlightenment thinking. But Jefferson was a capitalist like any other capitalist, and so slavery was part of his birthright, and he took his birthright, whatever. But he says, we're different. The basis of the society that we want to build, the way that we see the world, the way that we look at the world, is based upon the fact that black people are inferior to white people and therefore should be in slavery in perpetuity. And that the framers of the founders, whatever you want to call them, of America, at some point knew that slavery couldn't last forever because it was at cross purposes with the things that they wrote in their document. This is not to absolve them, but it's to say that this is what he believed. And we don't believe that. It's what it's built on. Now, I'll encourage everyone, as we don't have the time here to go into it, to investigate and read up for yourself on a lost cause ideology. What that essentially is a way of thinking that lionizes the South that came after the war was over and reimagines the Southern cause as one of states' rights, bravery, nobility in a lot of cases, and reimagines those men as not insurrectionists, not slavers, but as heroes. This is a school of thought that was widely, widely propagated and accepted in the early 1900s, and that gained a shit ton of steam with the release of the movie Birth of a Nation in 1915, where the Confederate battle flag was then proudly displayed. Because that flag that gets flown, I'm sure everybody knows, is not the flag of the Confederacy. It's like the fourth or fifth flag, and it was never the official flag of the Confederacy. It's the flag of a regiment in Virginia or something like that. But the flag itself became something to rally around for Southern sympathizers and Dixiecrats to be to rebel against civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
I say all that to say this. A lot of times we tell this huge lie.
Sure.
And the lie is that there are things that we just have, things that we just look at in different ways. We just look at things in different ways. Heritage, not hate, is something that you would hear growing up in the South. Heritage, not hate. Southern heritage, not hate. It's not hate. It's that Gone with the Wind and all of these other things told us about this Southern way of life, this way of life that we're trying to preserve, and that heritage is what's important to us and that doesn't have anything to do with hating anyone. And that's a school of thought. That's a way to look at things. And another way to look at things is to say that the flag represents hatred, that there are two different ways to look at it. That's a lie. It's ahistorical.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that based upon my opinion.
Sure.
It is a fact that is ahistorical. That flag, its prominence, and its place in American culture has a distinct beginning that is unassailable. It has a distinct beginning. And that beginning is very, very direct. What Stevens is talking about in the Cornerstone speech, it's not some nebulous, amorphous idea. This is how we view things. This is what we want in our society. They get their asses kicked. For a little while after they get their asses kicked, things start to change. There are the seven mystic years in which there was a chance for a racial reckoning where people are like, what's going to happen to Black people now? Went by the wayside. Things quiet down. 1915 comes, Birth of a Nation comes, other people start to come. The Ku Klux Klan regains its strength. They begin flying the Confederate battle flag, which now is a symbol of white terrorism. Right, the Confederate way of life, the Confederacy is a symbol of perpetual bondage and enslavement to Black people. There is no other side to the argument. I implore people to get rid of the yoke of toxic both sidesism. There is no other side. If you have a Confederate flag, if you attend Confederate Memorial Month, if you go there, you are a racist. You are celebrating something that in its intent, is the rape, bondage, and torture of Black people. No way around it. And when we talk about the Republicans, when we talk about who they are as a party and what they represent as a party and what they are as a party, I got to be honest with you, this is them. The modern Republican Party has to coddle and bring these people into their tent because these are the people that make up their base.
Mm-hmm.
The Republican governor of Mississippi,
mm-hmm,
devoted a whole month to celebrating the perpetual and everlasting bondage of Black people, as stated by the architects of the Confederacy. That is the truth. There's no other version of the truth. There's no other way that you can say it. There's no difference of opinion. There's nothing. History and fact denote that there was a purposeful myth that was told about the South in order to affect the lives of Black people and to change the perception of the South in the psyche and cultural reality of America. It's lost cause ideology, lost cause myth. Look it up. There's plenty of good stuff on it. All of this is real. So when you see someone saying we want to have Confederate History Month, it is exactly the same as Hitler Month. There's no difference. It's exactly the same as Hitler Month. There's literally no difference. It comes from a philosophy of superiority of white people. It comes from a philosophy of the mongrelization of an entire race of people. It's the same thing. And I'm sorry to say it to a bunch of Americans, but those people are your great, great, great grandparents. Those people, unfortunately, are my great, great, great grandparents. That's what we're dealing with. So having a whole month for that is not a small thing.
No, it's not.
If you understand the stakes and the intellectual reality of it, having a whole month of that is a disgusting, deeply, 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 deeply disrespectful, vile, and racist thing to have.
It's interesting when you talk about the way we look at it in a different way. Because not that I want to talk about this topic, but Taylor Swift made news because she's talks about
T-Swifty
in her song I Hate It Here. She talks about picking a decade. There's a lyric in there, right? Remember, a lot of people say she's the voice of our generation. She's one of the greatest poets. There's a line in there where she talks about how her friends go back and pick they play this game where they pick decades that they want to go back to. She picks the 1830s. But she says, I want to do the 1830s without the racist and without women being sold off to the highest bidder. And it upset a lot of people, and rightfully so. The rest of the lyrics in her song, in that song, talk about how the problem with playing this game, and I'm generalizing here, or the problem about going back and saying, I wish things were back like this, or I want to go back to this time, is that we romanticize nostalgia. And that's the point of the whole song. And so, you know, like, yeah, it was a stupid line. She definitely could have done it better. But the point is that we romanticize these things. And that ties into exactly what you're saying about people who want to fly the flag or who want to do these reenactments of the Civil War or want to honor a time that existed in our history. But they want to cut out the reality of the situation and what was really going on and what it really meant. And instead, they want to pick apart something that they find that was great. Or they want to water it down and say, oh, it really wasn't that bad. This isn't what it is. Oh, we stand for this. It's really about unity. It's really about honoring, you know, those who we lost that are a part of our heritage. But the reality is, no, it wasn't. For all the reasons that you just said, it was a terrible time, as was the 1830s.
In the 1830s.
But we do that. We do that with everything.
You got the shit in the hole. Like, this, can I say something, though?
Yeah.
I mean, some people do it with everything, but let me give you a small pushback.
Please.
We don't do it everything. Do we romanticize 9/11?
Not an event. We don't romanticize an event. Okay. We might romanticize the early 2000s.
Do we romanticize Nazi Germany?
The point of the song is not events. The point is time period.
No, I'm talking about a time period, Nazi Germany. I'm talking about 1933
but that's
to 1940.
But people might say, oh, in the 1940s, this happened. Yeah, that's my point.
I know, but understand what I'm saying, though.
Yeah.
And it's not to be argumentative, even though it is a podcast.
It is. You're totally being argumentative, but okay.
But let me tell you why. And maybe I am, but let me tell you why. Because there are certain periods in time that I'm telling you, they're not going to romanticize. Like there are certain things that the world looks at they're point to you like this before I fall all over my world or my words. History is a decision.
Mm-hmm.
People think that history is a set of facts that you look back on. No, history is a decision. It's a decision. It's a decision that you make. It's a decision that you make intellectually, and it's a decision that you make emotionally. And there was a decision made when you talk about the Holocaust or you talk about Nazi Germany. Sure. There was a decision made. And that decision involved a lot of people. The decision was, hey, this was an incredibly disgusting and putrid time. The people that perpetrated this are the lowest of the lowest scum. For two reasons. The first reason being the Holocaust and the people that were drugged into concentration camps, 12 million people.
Yeah.
And killed and maimed and experimented on and starved, tortured, right? The second reason being that Hitler started a war, and that war killed 3% of the world's population. It fundamentally changed the world, right? So these people are crazy. They're bad. It's almost like they're aliens. They swooped in for a while. We had to purge them, destroy them. You can't even own Nazi paraphernalia in a lot of places. And when you, it's illegal. And when people see that you have, like, think about it right now. If you walked into somebody's house right now and they had an Iron Cross or a swastika or a Hitler Youth knife or something like that, you'd immediately turn around and leave.
Sure. Right?
But think about the homes that you've been around in the South where people might have had rebel flags or might have had, it's not the same way. The reason why it's not the same way is because a different choice was made. Like a different choice was made. We shouldn't romanticize anything. I don't know. There's certainly things we shouldn't romanticize. But I'm telling you, when it comes down to the Confederates and this particular part of American history, a very specific choice was made. The first choice was to let it go. Okay, we need them to come back into the Union, right? We need the economics from the South. I mean, slavery's gone, but there's still a lot of land. We still have to repair the Union. So the first choice was to let it go. And then there was a second choice made. The second choice was to romanticize it. It was a cultural choice. In the movie The Searchers, probably the great...
My mom loves that movie.
Do you know John Wayne's character in The Searchers?
Never seen it.
In The Searchers, John Wayne's character is an ex-Confederate soldier. He's the hero of the movie. So like, what I'm saying is there was a cultural choice made. Just as there was a cultural choice not to look at the slaughter of Native Americans as one of the greatest crimes of humanity ever.
Yeah.
There was a choice made to romanticize that period as a period of great American frontier life, of great American discovery, of American expansion, of American exceptionalism, and to look at the people that were fighting against an invading, savage group of people as the actual savages. That was a choice that was made. Yeah. So when we romanticize that, we play cowboys and Indians, cowboys shoot Indians dead.
Yes.
And culturally and politically and all of those things. So what I'm saying is, like, look, there are things to be romanticized. I mean, sometimes you romanticize shit. Like, I'm going to look back at my time at McKinley High, and I'm going to feel like it was the best time of my life. 4 years at McKinley High. LaSanta Jones, greatest cheerleader of all time at McKinley High. Ryan's wife, you met her. Okay? I'm going to romanticize that. It's a decision. It's a choice. Right? If I had been getting my ass kicked and sexually assaulted every single day of my high school life at McKinley High, romanticizing that time would be a choice. And so all I'm saying with this, and we maybe we've spent too long on this, all I'm saying with this is, we sometimes act like these things are more complicated than they are.
Agreed.
Like, it's all right there. Just be responsible for what it is that you don't know. Just take fucking literally take 30 minutes. I'm gonna give you guys three things. Three things for homework. Read up on
Lost cause,
ideology. Mm-hmm. Read up on the origins. I'm sure our audience is well versed. Read up on the origins of the Confederate battle flag, the one that you say is the Confederate flag. That's not the Confederate flag. Read up on when different state houses actually put that flag on their state houses, right? Mm-hmm. Read up on all of that. Just take, literally take an hour and just know that this is deeply, deeply, deeply problematic and offensive to Black people. And it propagates the myth of eternal servitude of Black Americans. So it's not a small thing to have a Confederate,
sure,
to have a Confederate Heritage Month. It's a big, big, big fuck you.
What's the third thing?
What else did I say? Three things?
You said three. But maybe two and three were together.
Maybe two and three were together. I don't know. You have to use the bathroom?
I do. You see me wiggling?
Yeah, I see. You're,
I've been tapping his foot for a while.
You're such a human. You are the hungriest, bathroomiest. You're such a human.
You got up and used the bathroom earlier.
That's not what I did.
Okay, well, you got up.
I'm human because I have to blow my nose all the time.
All
right. All right, we got to go. We've spent too much time on this. This is a very serious show. We didn't get a chance to even have any fun. I would like to take the time to thank Kalika and Rachel and just say real quick, you guys had no idea how much I needed to see my boys. You guys had
Kalika
no clue.
Kalika did.
Kalika, like little mouse. I had no idea how much I needed to see my boys, and it was one of the single most amazing things anyone's ever done for me.
You have the best partner in life. And I just hope you always know that. She knew what you needed and she brought it to you. Yeah. I played a small role. I say, yes, they can come.
Yeah.
That was all her. That is all her idea.
I heard some other stuff about that too.
That was all her idea.
I heard you were fighting it.
No, oh my God, that is not true.
I heard you were fighting it.
Your guys coming? Oh, and their beautiful wives? No, I did not.
I heard you were against
that's me. A lie. Anyways, I called her after the last podcast and told her how concerned I was about you. And I said, Kalika, I'm so glad we have this surprise coming because he needs it and you knew it before, you know, anybody else. So anyways, yes. All Kalika.
All right. Take your thinking caps off. But do not stop learning. I'm Van Lathan Jr.
I'm Rachel Lynn Lindsay. Bye, guys.